You're listening to Rust Belt Run.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You ran that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at Wheels Up in CLE. Joined as I always am by Andrew Hettinger. You can find him on social media at Andrew Runs a Lot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick break to tell you a little bit about what we do with run coaching. Adam, why don't you tell us about it?
It's personalized run coaching. It takes into account the schedule that you have to get your runs in, the goals that you have, as well as the base that you come to us with. You talk to us about what it is you want to be doing, the time that you have to do it, and we come up with a personalized plan that fits your needs, works on you towards your goals, and helps provide a bird's eye view on your training to make sure that you don't plateau, to make sure that you're doing the correct training that's appropriate for you, and to get you showing up on race day confidence that you're going to be ready to hit your race goals.
So to learn more about how we can help you hit your race goals, go to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can find out about our different levels and coaching, find out more about us as runners and coaches, or you can support the show with buying merch, a sweatshirt, a patch that you can iron on to your singlet for that race that you're running soon. Maybe you don't want people knowing that you listen to us, but regardless, support the show. But for now, sit back and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Andrew, how you doing?
Dude, I'm living the dream, man. Just like every other time we record.
What kind of dream is that exactly?
TBD. TBD, my friend. No, I'm good. Oh. I really enjoyed talking with Clint McCormick from Glass City. That was a good time.
Yeah, that was.
You know, it was fun to tell him a bit of my experience and even some of my, like, I don't want to say ill will, but, you know, kind of the egg on I had on my face after how I felt about them running in 2021 in the spring. Man, it was really interesting. I didn't want to hit the pandemic too hard, but man, he had so many good things to say about it. And you could tell that he was passionate talking about it. I think he had conviction in how they handled, being one of the first big races. I mean, they're not a big race like Columbus or Boston or anything like that.
Right.
But I mean, 5,000 people, that's a lot of people to bring together in the middle of a pandemic. And, you know, to hear him kind of talk about, you know, how they were able to pull that off. I think he had, you know, took pride in talking about that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that time.
It's funny because being in the service industry, I'm around plenty of people who occasionally you'll stumble upon a conversation and they start railing against, you know, shutdowns and all that stuff from the early part of the pandemic. And it's not a conversation you want to get into in that setting. But the thing I always kind of remind myself, and I think it's worth remembering here, you know, talking with Clint about how he handled the race, is that there were a lot of times during that period where it felt like we absolutely knew the right thing to do, and, you know, regardless of how you felt about it. And when you start to look back on it from a little bit of a distance, you begin to realize just how fluid that situation was. And so often it was just, we're making decisions on the fly based on the best information that we have. And the thing that really stood out to me about Clint in that interview, especially when he talked about that specific time period planning for the 2021 race, is that he was working on getting the right information, or at least the best information he could, going back to 2020, going back to March of 2020. And so he was establishing those relationships that far back. And, you know, you and I were talking before we get on here just about, you know, we've had Brian Pullen on, we've had Verrell Wyatt on, and Darris and Clint, and, you know, all very passionate race directors, who bring different personalities to it. Like Darris is very like up and buoyant, and, you know, Darris has just a different sort of energy. Clint was more kind of locked in and serious. But what you do pick up on with the really good race directors is the focus on details, that focus on the granular details of how to put out, not just to put on the events, but to put on a quality event that people want to come to. And you'll certainly pick up on that when you listen to the interview with him.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing you brought up about the health department, I kind of asked him to circle back on that, because he had mentioned that, you know, their race is in April, and, you know, everything really got crazy in March and 2020. And that's when it all began. I mean, but it's also, you know, a fight for survival. Like we have to put this race on to survive. Like, this is
right.
You know, this is the, you know, it's not the full livelihood for him and his family, but it's a part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he's got to find the way to, you know, if we can't do it this year, what's it look like next year? You know, like, what do we have? What benchmarks do we have to hit? What can we do to contribute? And I thought that was very interesting. And something he didn't touch on, I tried to kind of lead him to it a little bit, was, you know, but he did such a good job at talking and taking the conversation on his own.
Yeah.
But it was the attachment to Mercy Health, which is the main sponsor of the Glass City Marathon. And, you know, whenever you have that, and I think, you know, I do think Darris touched on it when we had him on after 2021, but when you have a hospital that is, you know, either a sponsor or a charity one way or the other of the race, and its name is attached to your race, when you're talking about a health crisis, you have to get it right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an option. You have to get it right. And you have to kind of follow these people who are helping you make the race what it is. And I think sometimes we can forget that for people in the position of, you know, Darris or, you know, and Clint or any race director, they have to operate it as a business. It's not just a, you know, it's something we enjoy and are passionate about. And, but it is a business, and they have to operate it as such. And you can't piss off sponsors. You can't do anything that's going to alienate people who are allowing you to put the race on. And, the fine line that you have to walk in the middle of a pandemic that becomes so political because it's happening in an election year. Like, that, the line that you have to walk there is so razor thin.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear Clint talk about it. And I'm glad that he was as open to talk about it as he was, because here we are in 2022 or 2023. Three. I know. We're here in 2023, and, you know, we're not really talking too much about it anymore. You know, we have other viruses and stuff that are, you know, doing damage, but we're, you know, we're not in this pandemic phase like we were 2-3 years ago.
Right.
So I'm glad that he was still willing to talk about it, though. Yeah. So many people want to move on from it, but I think it's part of what makes his race special is that they did it. They did it successfully in April before. I remember the one thing that was so frustrating about it to me when they put it on was vaccines had just come out. It was this, like, everybody just hold on just a little bit longer, because like, and you and I were able, they finally opened up vaccines to everybody like the beginning of April.
Yeah.
But you had to wait your 2 weeks for your second dose. And then 2 weeks after that, you were going to have your full efficacy, and that was not going to fall in line with the start of the Glass City Marathon. It was going to be a little bit ahead of that timeline if everybody went the first day they were eligible and all that. And it's like, why would we? That was part of my thought with them needing to just go to the fall, but he goes through how they pulled it off, and it was really good stuff.
I think a lot of that comes back to You know, at that point, people were making decisions about, you know, what do they feel comfortable doing? Some people, they got fully vaccinated and, you know, they still weren't really going to go out if they're going to be around people that were unvaccinated. And, you know, that was a very different time too, because you're talking about God knows how many strains ago, and those strains didn't have the sort of immune escape that, you know, like Omicron would eventually end up having. I remember personally, like, as soon as I got vaccinated, I was like, all right, I feel comfortable pretty much doing
100%.
And, you know, he brought it up, you know, he said a mentor talked to him and said, listen, it's your race, it's your rules, and people get to decide, am I coming or not? I wanted to circle it back to it with him, and it just didn't fit into the conversation, but he talked about how, you know, some of the comments he got, a lot of the comments were, you know, about gratitude, and it took me back to a race I did on the towpath that year, a much smaller event than his event would have been, but it would have been around the same time of year, sometime in April. And I can remember standing there, and there were still restrictions. Like, typically that April race goes off in just one big heat and that's it. And they actually did like three separate heats. And I remember there were X's marked out so that we were spaced out in the corral. And I remember all of that happening. But once you got running, it was like, oh yeah, this feels normal. And that was a time where you were slowly getting back normal things. Every week it felt like you were getting something back. And I do remember having that sense of gratitude of just like, oh yeah, like, this is a race. This is normal. Like, I feel like how I want to feel in a moment like this. And so I'm not surprised at all that that was the feedback that he got. The other thing too that I said I wanted to circle back to with you is him talking about 90s running.
Yes.
Because we didn't get into running until... For us, it was the 2010s. And I loved hearing about 90s running and just how much more sort of competition-based it was. It reminded me, there's a book about the creation of the Falmouth Road Race back in the 70s. And it's funny to read from authors who are very hardcore runners who are all about the hardcore competition part of it. Because the book concludes looking at how there's so many more runners who are running now. And the author's like, you know, it's really a shame because... you know, you look at average marathon races now and average marathon finishing times, and they've gone, like, the times have increased by an hour because the competition isn't nearly as strict. And, you know, the author who wrote this book is kind of lamenting that. And I'm thinking, like, well, I get it. If the hardcore competition aspect of it is your thing, yeah, maybe you're going to look at that and be a little sad. I look at that and go, like, there's a lot more people who are out there running and being healthy and enjoying the social aspects of it. So I don't care. But it was interesting hearing him talk about that, because that's somebody who experienced it in a way that you and I didn't.
There was one thing he talked about in that I thought was interesting too. And it's something I wish we could have unpacked a little more. Was he kind of said we're a little bit smarter now there, you know, some of the, I think the training modalities and stuff is maybe what he was referring to. And I was going to bring up, there was a, Matt Martin had sent me a tweet from Skip Bayless where he's talking about his marathon running. Skip Bayless is a grade A douche. And he's talking about apparently a really fast one. He said he ran a 2:47, which I believe. I mean, he's a small dude. Like, he's got a runner's ish body. I mean, he's actually jacked now. I forget there. I think there might be a commercial where he has his shirt off or something, but he's like, dude's cut. Whoa. Like, he beat my ass. But he's talking about how, you know, he was running 100 miles a week and all this stuff to try to do this, and he can't run another marathon because he can't put his body through that. I'm like, dude, if you didn't run 100 miles a week and you were just like smarter and you weren't running like 25 miles for your long run every weekend, you probably could have done a lot better than 2:47. Like, you know, it's and that was, I think, kind of where Clint was going, because he kind of talked about how this more is more was kind of the mentality back then. And it's not correct, as you and I, you know, both are, you know, well aware of. And you know, try to kind of teach and preach to our athletes. More is not always more. No. And I think that was fun. Yeah, this was a really good conversation. I really enjoyed our time with Clint. I, yeah, I think I'm going to go. I think when we get off here, I'm going to go finally register for April 23rd, 2023.
Oh, a race in the spring and not another one to add on to your fall?
That's when Columbus registration opens tomorrow.
I just got the email, actually.
So we're recording this on the 14th. I'm going to register for Columbus on the 15th, I think. And this is our conversation with Clint McCormick, race director from the Glass City Marathon in Toledo, Ohio. Put it on your list. That's Clint's ask, is put it on your list. So enjoy this time.
Hey, Clint, how you doing today?
Wonderful.
Good. It's a Saturday. You better be wonderful.
It's always good on a Saturday.
Yeah. You know, I was going to kind of kick this off by saying, you know, it's a Saturday. What are we doing? We're working. But that's kind of what my life is, right?
Well, and you know,
weekends is when we work.
Yeah. It feels like the work doesn't end. And if you're training, the work doesn't end.
Correct.
But we actually enjoy this. So yeah. There is like a different aspect to it. It's that whole like ridiculous saying, if you love what you do, you won't work a day in your life, which is bull crap because sometimes it still sucks. You know, it's kind of that same thing. Like, I don't mind setting an alarm to get up and get moving so that I can do this on a weekend. Because I actually enjoy sitting around and getting to know people. Clint, we've not interacted much at all. We've just decided to have you on with Glass City training starting pretty much this week for a lot of people. So it's April 23rd. Is that a week earlier than it usually is?
No, it's just we're at the peak of the calendar reset. So we're always the fourth Sunday. So this year it seems early, actually. Okay.
Yeah.
Next year we'll reset, and I think it's like April 28th. So then it starts trickling back down. So,
right.
Because, yeah, I'm going to Boston to watch Adam run Boston the week before, and I didn't realize that it was only a week. And then I was like, that's actually kind of sweet because that takes any pressure off of me having to do any work while we're in Boston. Like, I don't have to do any workouts. Like, I can really just like enter full on. You know,
yeah, but we know when you go there, you know, you'll get your mileage in. That's for sure.
For sure. But plenty of it will be on a bike, and I'm sure some of it will also be while inebriated. So it's going to be a good time. So Glass City, how did you get involved with the Glass City Marathon and become the race director there?
Interesting story. And essentially, I was voluntold to be the race director. Wrong place, wrong time, or is that the right place, right time scenario, right? So it's just a changing of the guard and kind of the club's position on what to do with the signature race. It had been going on for 32, 33 years, and I guess wasn't performing to the level that the club expected. So they took a guy who had never been a race director before, who understood running and has a business degree, and said, hey, see what you can do with it. And like I say, the rest is history, but here we are 15 years later.
What is your background with running?
Just ran it all through high school and enjoy the sport and just been around the club for a long time. So I kind of grew up in the 90s running scene, which was, I would say, a lot different than what it is now. And when you, as a race director now, trying to appeal to today's audience, I think is a little bit different than my initial mindset of appealing to the runner from the 90s era. You know, you talk to a lot of the, I'll call them the elders, you know, I ran a marathon and we had two water stops and who needs all this Gatorade stuff, you know, just give me a cup of water. You know, that was really the 70s mentality. I think we got a little bit smarter with nutrition and things like that, but going into today's environment, it's more of a, I would say a social experiment, if you will. People care about the longevity of their lives a little bit different. And there's this whole concept of work-life balance, trying to set a good example for your kids and all that, the factors go on and on that drive people to the sport. And it's not, they're not trying to be age group winners. They want to be healthy. And I think there's a big difference in how we approach that now from an event management perspective.
So what did races look like in the 90s? Because Adam and I are both millennials, so I can only speak to what my brother's high school cross country races looked like.
Right. So, you know, I was a age grouper. I was never much better than that. I didn't win races, but, you know, I was always, you know, top 10 or an age group winner. So it was, I would say, more competitive, you know, and that's just my own looking at it without crunching the numbers. But I would say that, you know, to place in your age group then is a lot different than it is now. And certainly with a lot fewer races. So if you would go to a race, everybody's there. Whereas now you can, at least in our market, you can choose one of five races, 5K, you know, distances typically. And you can run an 18 minute and win the race pretty easily. That wasn't necessarily the case back then. So I think it was more of a competitive type of sport. If you were considered a runner, and that phrase is very interesting now because I work at, you know, in a running store as well. And most of the people walk in, they're afraid to turn themselves runners. They think that term runner is a bad phrase. Like, I don't want to be considered a runner. I just run, right? Because they run for all the other reasons, but they don't want to be considered to be a runner. So I think that was the different mindset. You know, back then I was a runner, and now people who do the sport can run.
I love the thought. Like, I have never thought about the divide between what it was like, you know, 30 years ago and what it is now. And I'm just kind of fascinated that we're even in this. What did training look like in the 90s compared to today? Because now we have running coaches and we have all these plans available and GPS watches and all of this. What did that look like? I can tell you that,
you know, through my high school years and certainly after, I think it was more three sport athletes. I think there's a big difference. And if you look at the people who are committed to the sport now in, you know, kind of the top of their game, even in any sport, whether it be baseball or volleyball or basketball, that's all they do all year round. Mm-hmm. And they try to hone their craft. Back then, you know, I played recreational basketball. I swam, you know, I wrestled. You mix in different sports to keep it going. And so I think there's a big difference there. And I just went from sport to sport, but now it's, you do indoor track and then you do outdoor track and then you do summer training and then you go into cross and there's not much time for other sports. Each sport is so competitive. And of course this is the high school and college level. But I do think the training is different. The knowledge and education that we have of how to perform is significant. There's so much information now of how to properly treat your body like a machine versus back then. It's like, all right, we're going to put in, you know, 70 miles this week. Let's just go run. And you had your standard, okay, today's a fast day, today's a fartlek day, is a distance day, whatever. But now it's every workout has a very specific purpose. I think the education that they have these days is so much different. And then I would say, so that's at the high school, college level. At the recreational level, we see this locally. We've got a training group that, you know, they train for Glass City. And then we have, it kind of goes into a 5K program for the summer and then back to the half marathon, marathon for the fall. And it's regimented. And we have these adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s doing track workouts, you know, very specific. You know, they do, I can't remember how many days a week they work out, but I think Thursdays is the track day. Saturdays is a long day. Sundays is a recovery day. Mondays they do tempo runs and stuff. So they have a very specific workout now. So it's very fascinating to see these adults getting on the track like they're high school kids and pushing themselves. I don't think that ever existed. At least watching my dad and other guys in the club work out during that time period in the 90s, I never went to the track and do that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just a totally different time period of training. There's so much information out there.
What is my son doing back there? Good Lord. I just,
that's the fun part about this podcast. Occasionally there's just some background noises. We have no idea what it is. You'll hear yelling at video games.
Right.
High quality production here at Rust Belt Running. So you said you took over Glass City 15 years ago.
Right. So the summer of 2008,
okay,
I was appointed the race director to prepare for the 2009 year.
Okay.
So yeah, 15 years now. It's hard to believe.
And you said that some of it was, there was just a feeling amongst the club that the race wasn't performing at the level of what they were looking for.
Yeah, they were looking to bring in more youth into the club. You know, when you look at running clubs in general, a lot of them just kind of go through these cycles of aging and you know, how do you bring in the youth? So there was a movement to bring in younger officers into the club, younger race directors into the club. And basically it's okay, what's our 15-year, 20-year plan for the club to make sure that the club stays viable and relevant. And I think that was just part of the movement. I was on the race director side and other people were kind of put onto the officer side, which I think I won in that one.
So you keep bringing up the club.
Yeah.
For those of us who are in the Toledo Mame. Yeah. Explain to us the club.
So the club is the Toledo Roadrunners Club, one of the older clubs in the country. Started kind of in the early 70s. I'll kind of give you some history here. So in the early 70s, there were two kind of factions, if you will. There was the University of Toledo Running Club, then there was the Toledo Roadrunners Club, but they really weren't kind of working together. I think it was 1978 or 79. They kind of said, hey, let's just make one big club, and they incorporated and made a legitimate running club for the area. We're very fortunate that in our market, that is the prominent, that is the only official running club we have. So membership is quite high. I think we're over 1,500 members. Whereas if you go to a lot of other markets, you'll see several clubs with smaller numbers. Mm-hmm. So you have different factions kind of competing for their areas. But we've done a good job of kind of holding the club together, of providing value and education and what have you, so that there remains one prominent club in the area. So, and that is the Toledo Roadrunners. So the Toledo Roadrunners Club is the owning entity of the Glass City Marathon. So that's kind of who I report to on a monthly basis and kind of who oversees the operations of the event.
Is there anything specific that you started doing when you took over as far as getting the race more towards the level that the club wanted it at that you did to try to change the race?
Everything, top to bottom. The challenge that we had prior is, it was a one man show. So we developed a committee, so that I didn't have to do everything on my own. And remember at the time, and a lot of race directors in this boat, you have a full-time job and managing a race of any size is typically kind of their hobby, their side hustle, things, something they just do on the side. So, for the first two or three years, I just purely did this volunteer role and it consumes you, to do it at the level we wanted to do. But, you know, we developed a website, you know, we developed a marketing campaign, we developed budgets, you know, we put a business plan in place to say, what do we want this race to be? And then we kind of put that plan to execute it. So when we kind of said, okay, we have this event, it's been going on for 32 years. What is the right size number, right? What are we looking for just in terms of participants? Again, at the time it was 700 people. We said, okay, how about a 5-year plan? Let's make this a 5,000 person event. You know, for the metro size of Toledo, does that feel appropriate compared to other areas? Granted, we have, in Ohio, we have a significant amount of competition, sister marathons, if you will, and every major market has one. You know, go around the state, you know, Dayton, Cincinnati, Columbus, Akron, Canton, Cleveland, everybody's got a marathon event. So how do we fit into that, doing our standard market analysis? Okay, what do we feel is appropriate? And then what type of offerings do we have? You know, if we're going to attract people to come to Toledo, what is the offering, meaning the distance, the type of event, and then also the location of the event? So we started looking at really dissecting every piece of the event. And year one, we didn't make a whole lot of changes other than we created a half marathon. You know, back in 2008, 2009, the half marathon distance alone was the fastest growing segment of the industry. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that. So that was kind of one of the catalysts towards our growth.
Oh, nice. I thought you were gonna keep going there.
I can just keep on going on and on and on, but you know,
So what year are we in? Like, we're still at the beginning of your tenure here, right?
Right. Yeah. It's interesting that when I started this, I had no kids. Now I've got three of them. One's going to high school next year. And, you know, it's just fascinating. Their whole lives, this is all they know.
Right.
Now, how when it comes to Glass City, you've had a very interesting couple of years, the past few years. In 2020, I was training for Glass City, and I was for sure going to PR. I was gonna PR my full substantially, and
I was even
the company I was working for the day after my last long run before everything hit the fan. I was working in the Glass Bowl of all places, and I was sitting in the press box, and I was looking down at the 50-yard line, going, that's my finish. This is so kismet. Like, this is going to be amazing. And then obviously everything was pulled out from under us very quickly after that. And, and then we, you know, fast forward to 2021, and you guys were in a really tough spot because we still were kind of, we were on the, like, the edge of getting back to normal ish life, but we weren't quite there yet. And you had a lot of races pushed back to the fall. That seemed to be kind of the safe bet. That's what I said that y'all should do. You decided not to do it. You went another way. I did not use my deferred entry. I decided to take care of my dad, who had to have major surgery, and take care of myself. I had an operation I needed to have done that year too. And I was like, Glass City messed up. It's gonna whatever. And, but you guys didn't. I saw a lot. I had a lot of friends who went and ran, and you guys kind of set the tone a little bit, just following, you know, Mercy Health is, you know, the big name next to the Glass City Marathon. And you guys really worked hard to make sure that you did the right thing and the smart thing, being one of the first races to kind of get back going. What was that process kind of like as y'all decided what a marathon during a pandemic? Without vaccines being readily, like, fully available yet, you were a few weeks ahead of everybody being able to really be vaccinated too.
That was the frustrating part, but it was a lesson learned early in my tenure. We had one of our club presidents on his way out, kind of made a letter to the officers and stuff, and said, "Hey, you know, managing anything that you do, you have to make the difficult choices, not the popular ones." And then let history kind of determine if it was a good decision or not. So use all the information you have to make the tough choice. At the end of the day, somebody's got to make the choice. But it really, it started when we were shut down in March of 2020. It's fascinating how quickly the health department became the barrier for event permits. So understanding that this was a health decision, health department decision, you know, at the highest level, I've never spoken to my health department before to get a permit for an event.
Right.
So I made a conscious effort in March of 2020 to engage with our local health department to say, okay, what does this mean for us? Because in 1 year from now, I mean, you just shut us down this year, but in 1 year, how do we go from zero to 10,000 people? Right. What does that look like? How do we set ourselves up for success? Because if you're going to lock us up and then all of a sudden we're going 100 miles an hour again, people won't be ready for it. Not only the participants won't know what to do, but our operations crew won't know what to do, because most events are on an annual basis. You only get to do it once. I'm in a unique position that we have an event management company here in town, and we produce many races. So what we kind of did is, okay, let's set up a kind of a stepping stone process. So as things started to open up again, what does it look like? You know, how close can we have people? And started trying to figure out, how do you corral? And every operational aspect of the event we started working on. And we held our first race in August of that summer. It was 300 people, but it was still an event, and it gave us something to practice. A month later, we did another race, and it grew up to, I think, 500 people. Then a month later, we did another race, and it was 1,000 people. And it was interesting to find and adapt our policies and procedures based on human interaction. When you have 300 people, it's easy to have them do what you want. But when you start getting up over 1,000 people, kind of a herd mentality takes over, and it's very difficult to control. So you have to start planning those those things out. What do you expect them to do when you hit 1,000 people? And what do you expect them to do when you have 5,000 people? And kind of, you know, they're not going to stand on X's, and I'm not going to write, you know, 5,000 X's in sidewalk chalk on a road 3 feet right. apart. That's just, I don't have the time for that. And I didn't think that was a good way to go. So we try to balance what can we do, what will people do, and put a plan in place for that. And fortunately, it kind of worked out. You know, I talked to my medical director once or twice a week, probably for a year. I talked to the health department on a weekly basis and kind of kept up to date with what's the science telling them that we're supposed to do and what are the health policies. And we were given some latitude to try things out. And I think because we engaged with the health department at an early onset, it allowed us to develop that relationship, and he built some trust into us that we weren't going to, you know, just do whatever we wanted to do, and we wanted to have things in a safe way. So we were given some latitude. And I think that other events didn't have that luxury. They may have came into it during their permitting process, and now it's just another paper on their stack to approve or deny without having that relationship built in. So that was probably the biggest thing that we learned in this, is that relationships matter. You don't just want to become just another cog in the wheel. You've got to talk to people, and they've got to know you, and you've got to work with them. So that was kind of one of the key things that we did, is working with the health department. The second thing that we did is, as an industry, there's no playbook, right? So what we did here in Ohio is, shortly after my race, we have Cleveland, Cincinnati. Then we also have Cap City down in Columbus. I mean, we have three major races right after Glass City. So I started calling all the race directors in the state saying, hey, as a state, we have a lot of marathons. How do we create kind of a standing policy? You know, kind of thinking of, if we create the plan and then we take it to our health departments or our permitting agencies, well, this is what everybody else is doing in the state. You know, I think we have kind of power by numbers that way. It worked for some areas, the health department's got really big heads, and they just said, nope, this is how we're doing it. And they don't care who you are. So it was more difficult in some areas, but I think it really did help that we started kind of a monthly phone call of race directors in at least the state of Ohio to say, what are you doing in Cincinnati? What are you doing in Columbus? And what are we doing here in Toledo? And I think that really helped as well to kind of share some philosophies. And then we did what we thought was right for our environments. So I would say those are kind of the two biggest factors that led us to our decision in March of 2021 to proceed with the policies that we had.
What was some of the feedback y'all got? Because what I saw, like, I had major FOMO when fear of missing out. I'm a millennial. You're mm-hmm. a 90s runner. I have to. Right.
But, sorry about that.
When I was seeing friends post and I was seeing the race post, it's like, damn, I really missed out. But what was the feedback from the people who were there overall that year?
I would say very positive, very respectful. And I think very grateful. That was kind of the feeling on the ground of, like, they understood. I mean, we had procedures in place for packet pickup, and it was outside in the football concourse. So it wasn't normal, but everybody got it. You know, they knew what they had to do. You know, they stood in line, which at one point seemed like it was a forever line. But one thing on the line thing that I wanted to say is, when you have a line that wraps halfway around the football stadium in April of 2021, it really doesn't wrap her all the way around, but people were given space. You know, you probably saw this in the grocery stores too, that, oh my God, that long is so long. But everybody's 3 feet apart. So the line is three times longer, it appears, than what it really is. So they really do move fast. And I was concerned about it for BOMIC site. So I went out there and actually timed it. How long does it take somebody from the back of the line to get to the front of the line? It was like 5 minutes, you know? So it seemed a lot longer than what it really was. So that was, mm-hmm. that was nice, but people were grateful. And they did what they were supposed to do. And I don't really believe we had any at all negative feedback on it. So it was a good year. And if you look at the results from that year, it was a competitive field still. And I want to say 31 or 32% of our field qualified for Boston.
Wow.
Because we were one of the few events that were able to be held. Yeah. So people, so one, it kind of proved our course is an awesome course. You know, it's low elevation changes, high competition, and it's a good spring PR kind of course. So that's kind of, I would say, solidifies that. You know, we always thought that it was, and, you know, over the years, I've kind of created some campaigns. And actually, when I go to expos, I hand out plane tickets that say, this is your ticket to Boston. And I have a bunch of references on there, like, you know, your boarding pass is April 23rd and starting time is 6:30 a.m. or, you know, your gate time. And so it looks like a legitimate plane ticket. And I hand them out at expo. I say, hey, have you been to Boston before? No. Well, here's your plane ticket, you know? So that's just kind of one of my gimmicks. But that kind of really solidified it, that having, you know, a third of your field qualify in their respective times is really a good feeling. Yeah, it was definitely a good year. People did what they were supposed to do. And, you know, we learned some things as well as, well, geez, you know, these corrals, you know, were developed, you know, kind of by the Boulder run back in the 80s, really for large scale races. But there's an absolute function to have corrals in almost any size race. Because what we come to find is that not only does it control your start line, but it really has a big impact on your finish line, right? And your water stops and everything else, it kind of trickles it out and slows things down. So you know, instead of feverishly handing out finisher medals and water and heat sheets at your finish line, you can control the pace of how quickly and dense people come into your finish line. So I would hope that a lot of marathons and kind of in my size, the medium size to smaller size marathons continue to do corralling. Cause I think it provides their athlete just a much better experience than not, you know, mm-hmm. You can get into your pace quicker, have more smooth run, and it's not going to take you 4 miles to get into pace.
Even the bigger races that do corrals, it can still be just an absolute pain because you don't have people pay attention to what they're supposed to do or just blatantly ignore what they're supposed to do. And that can drive you nuts. That's what makes a race the size of Glass City almost perfect, though, because you have fewer people who can really mess that up.
Yeah, there's enough people to make it feel busy, if you will, and enough support throughout you, whatever mileage you're at. But not so many people that you're going to get hit in elbows.
I do want to just circle back to one thing, just one little observation I have, you talking about the pandemic, and just to, again, I told you beforehand I was going to give you props because I thought y'all made a mistake, and you guys knocked it out of the park, but I see why. Because your conversations with the health department began before 2021 canceled or 2020 mm-hmm. even canceled. And you carried that relationship. And, you know, you even talked about how you wanted to make sure, like, the decisions y'all made, that the protocols y'all put in place were based in the science of what the health department, you know, was believing in. And that allowed you to put on a successful race in this unknown time. And mm-hmm. I do commend that. And as somebody who, again, kind of doubted what y'all were doing at the time, I saw great things. And, you know, hearing you talk about it, I understand why. So mad props to that.
Thank you. Yeah, very difficult. The biggest thing was that you have to remember that time period, the country and possibly the world, but mostly the country was very divisive and divisive mm-hmm. on forcing vaccinations. And, you know, I got some hate mail, you know, comparing us to Germany and Nazis and all that kind of stuff. And it was a very difficult time. And quite frankly, I left Facebook for probably 2 years because it became so toxic. And it's very difficult to operate in that environment and that atmosphere. So I made the decision, okay, well, I'm just going to cancel the noise and not listen to it anymore. And, I think there's a lot of mental health issues out of that we're facing now. All that to say, at the end of the day, a race director that is a mentor for me, you know, I called him up and said, gosh, you know, how do we do this? And he goes, well, it's your race, your rules. You know, they don't have to come. You're not forcing anybody to show up to your event. If they want to come to your rule, come to your event, then here's the rules that you have to follow. Yeah. So that was kind of, okay, that helps. So
we had Darris Blackford on shortly after his 2021 race in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And he notoriously, he said on our podcast back when we first started that he reads every comment that he gets in the post-race surveys. And, you know, they're bigger than Glass City. They'll get 10,000, 12,000 comments, and he reads every one of them. And I asked him after 2021 how many of those comments he read. He's like, we didn't even do a survey this year because there were just so many negative comments about the vaccine versus testing and all this stuff. And I mean, I can't imagine. I would love to see the difference between the spring and the fall too, because I think the spring we did feel maybe like we were lucky to be able to do anything. And then the fall, it just got even worse. And just that divisiveness and everybody digging their heels in. And I mean, I'm as guilty of that as anybody else. But
right. But I mean, I talked to Darris. Darris was on calls with us every month and trying to decide, you know, here's what I'm doing in Toledo. And he has to now decide with that information, what do we do in Columbus?
Yeah.
Right. So and every jurisdiction was a little bit different of what they're allowed to do. But yeah, it's tough. That time of year, even going into 2022 of last year, deciding that we're not going to require things and how we're going to operate, it's still a discussion. I'm very thankful that now going into 2023, there's quite frankly been zero discussion on vaccine requirements or testing or anything. This is our first year of planning normally. But like I said, still taking some lessons learned out of, again, the corralling and staggering and how do we operate things differently. Traffic control kind of stuff really is still part of our everyday procedures now.
You sold the idea of Toledo being of Glass City being a Boston qualifier pretty hard. And, you know, thinking about, I've lived in Ohio all my life. I really don't know much about Toledo. I had a friend who went to UT for college, so I came up to Toledo then. But I really haven't been to Toledo too much. I don't know much about the city. And so beyond just it being a flat, fast course that can get you to Boston, what are some reasons to run Toledo that people who don't live in the town really don't know about?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going to rewind now 15 years to why I made so many changes that we did. I would say that the downtown Toledo area was depressed. There wasn't a whole lot going on. I'm not going to say it was run down, but there just wasn't much going on. And the investment into the downtown had started, but hadn't picked up. So what I mean by that is, if you remember this YouTube channel concept just start being born in that time period, 2008, 2009, a lot of people are starting to document with video content their experiences in going to different places. So 2009 is my first year putting the race on. We kept it downtown. That's where it was since 1991. And I'm just reviewing afterwards, looking for comments, looking for reviews, and any media that I can find just saying, okay, how did we do and what do people think? And I came across a YouTube video of a person, I can't remember what state she visited from, but she was out of town, and just giving an honest assessment about, hey, here's what Toledo looks like, you know? If you come to Toledo, and she walks out of the expo onto one of the main roads of downtown Toledo, there's not a car in sight. There's not a person in sight. It looks like a ghost town. And I'm going, that's the marketing campaign that's going to go out there right now about why come to Toledo and there's nothing happening. So we had to make a change to say, okay, well, we certainly don't want to highlight the depressed areas. Where can we move our course to? And at the time, stadium finishes were kind of starting to become a thing. So we looked at stadium finishes and what stadiums do we have around here. So went to the University of Toledo, talked to them, pitched them the idea of like, hey, let's finish in their football field, the Glass Bowl Stadium. They loved the idea and we brought it on campus. And that was kind of one of the major reasons why we made that change was the University of Toledo is somewhat the cornerstone of Northwest Ohio. And then from an event perspective, you have to go somewhere where you can park 10,000 people, right? So mm-hmm. where do we have parking garages and where can we actually put people? So that was kind of one of the catalyst reasons of moving the event to campus, is to have that stadium finished, to have that atmosphere of kind of youth, you know, on a campus, and how do you get energy and create atmosphere? So all that to say, since then, there's been a huge economic boom in downtown Toledo. Our these are AAA or AA, but our minor league baseball team, it does quite well. And they've got a stadium down there. Our hockey team does quite well, and they pack it. And they sell out every single game. That's downtown. They've pretty much ripped up and redone every road downtown. The convention centers is basically just went through a multi-year, multi-million dollar renovation. So we're moving our expo back downtown this year, 2023. That's kind of our major announcement for this year. And then another health system, ProMedica's, they've relocated downtown, dumped millions of dollars. So now the downtown area is thriving. There's a lot of youth living down there. There's things to do, a lot of really cool restaurants. Hotels have been renovated and rebuilt. So everything in downtown Toledo now is pretty new. It's young. But the other thing is it's affordable. I've been living here for pretty much most of my life since junior high, essentially. Anywhere you want to go, it's a 20-minute drive. There's no traffic. The cost of living is very affordable. And then you have culture. I'll say, you know, we have a world-renowned art museum downtown, and then we have a world-class zoo. So there's just a lot of things to do outside of just doing the race, you know. So we started working last year with the local tourism entity, Destination Toledo. And you'll see in some of our campaigns that, hey, this is the destination. So Destination Toledo is kind of our campaign slogan for the year. And they're really doing a lot of things to bring other events to town. So one of the things in the summer that gets highlighted is the Toledo Jeep. So everybody who drives a Wrangler around town, you know, or something, you know, that's built here in Toledo. So they're very proud of that. That's taken on a whole new life. Mm-hmm. And then this year we have the Italian Bowl coming, if you haven't heard about that yet. But in Italy, believe it or not, they play American football. So their Super Bowl, they call it the Italian Bowl, is being played in the Glass Bowl in July.
Really? So that's coming, amazing. Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff and a lot of energy happening now that really, hopefully, you know, we're kind of part of that story. So that's kind of fun and exciting.
I was going to ask because I spent some time in Toledo just for work, and I didn't think the downtown was that bad, especially, you know, by the Mud Hen Stadium. And, I thought it was, I was like, this is a pretty sweet downtown. I wonder why the race is kind of kept out of here, especially because, you know, a lot of the marketing is on that really cool bridge that you guys have that the race doesn't even come near. And I'm like, I wonder if there's any thought to, you know, getting that more involved in the, you know, you're getting involved with the expo and stuff you talked about taking downtown, but is there any thought about getting the course more involved downtown?
Yeah. So from a course perspective, I'll say number one, a marathon course by nature is very expensive. Mm-hmm. So anytime you go into a downtown area, usually what you're going to find is that every intersection requires one police officer, every intersection with a stoplight requires two officers. And it quickly adds up. So the route that we have now being more suburban, we actually have less community impact than we would if we were to move it back downtown. But also the route we have now it's pretty mature for the size we have, and it's become kind of the staple of the event. But I will say that whether we do a 5K or a kids event, maybe on Saturday, downtown, that certainly is something in, you know, kind of that we're evaluating, and it's several years away. Maybe we do a mile competition. You know, we're always looking, how do we expand our offering to our participants? And, you know, if you look at what the Flying Pig does, they have an event, you know, every hour, it seems. They got a lot of stuff going on, and it's and that's a really cool event. But also Cincinnati is, I don't know, two times the size of Toledo, and they pull from different markets. And do we have that same luxury? And that's one of the things that when we do our our kind of our regional study of what we do. What is Toledo? You know, we're not an NFL city. We don't have a major league baseball team here. You know, we're kind of, you know, I say we're a tier two city, so we need to approach things a little bit differently. I lean more on the value structure of, hey, we're a Midwestern town and we're nice to people and, you know, we're affordable and family friendly and all these other attributes that we have. And those are kind of the things that we want to put in place for the event. So, you know, one step at a time, you know, we evaluate every year of how do we grow and how do we stay relevant.
One way that you guys are growing is this year, 2023, which I'm sure you're like, why haven't they asked me about this? The Roadrunner Club of America, you are the championship event. That is for the full marathon?
That is for the full marathon, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so the RRCA, for those who may not know, is kind of the parent organization of running clubs. All right, so the Toledo Roadrunners Club locally here, they don't necessarily report to the RRCA, but the RRCA kind of provides the procedures and guidance of how a club should operate. So in that respect, they hand out award different levels of championship statuses. So they have a state level championship, a regional level, and then the national level. And the national level is the kind of the highest award you can receive from RRCA in terms of distance competition. So this was something that we kind of decided, I would say back in 2016, that we wanted to make a run and apply for and get the national championship race to Toledo because we felt we have a national caliber event. So is, you know, kind of the wheels kind of got started back in 16, 17. At the time, the president of the RRCA was from Ann Arbor. So that definitely helped that we can bring him down, walk him around, get some ideas and kind of plant the seed. And it takes time. You know, we wanted to do this when we felt it was right. 2018, 2019, we were kind of at the peak. Our 2019 was our peak numbers for everything in Northwest Ohio. Running was kind of booming and then everything came crashing down. So we certainly didn't want to do it in 2022 because we still really didn't know what the rules were. And then Dallas, their race in 22 was in December. So it made a lot more sense for a later year race to host it in 22. Mm-hmm. We felt 23 was right for us to do it. So we applied. And fortunately we were awarded on that, partially by recognizing the work and the thought and the operations that we had over the last 3 years. So we were awarded the race of the year by, Road Race Management. We were also, I was awarded the race director of the year. So kind of a trifecta of awards here over the last couple of years.
What sort of competition do you foresee that bringing to the race this year then?
Difficult to say because there's kind of two guiding companies, if you will, or brands in road racing. One is USA Track and Field. And now when you start doing USA Track and Field competition, that's kind of your gateway to Olympic trials and Olympic and kind of your world stage. And then you have Roadrunners Club of America, which is more of your club running, age groupers, things like that. The difference to me is on USA Track and Field, you might have higher competition, but there's a lot less people. Roadrunners Club of America, you might have less competition, but you have a lot more people. Mm-hmm. And I think that fits us, it kind of fits what we do pretty well. Our race is big enough to have competition, but it's really consumed the participant-wise, the base, more by the age grouper and kind of Joe Public. So it kind of fits our event a little bit better than maybe a Boston or Chicago kind of event. So, in terms of competition, I'm certainly recruiting people. We're going to use that designation as much as we can, that this is the national championship for the marathon. You know, we've proven that the course is fast. Last year was abnormally warm. So we had three or four guys who ran, came to our event to qualify for the Olympic trials. And man, they just missed it. And it was a warm day. Fast forward actually to early December, I think they ran out in California and they ran 2:15. So they ran a 5-minute swing from April to December, basically based on weather and probably some additional training. But we fully expect to have some Olympic trials runners this year, which is 2:18. And our times usually float around 2:20, 2:21 to win the marathon on the men's side. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's right there for the taking, I think. And as you know, in distance running, a minute or two off your time can be the difference of how your gut feels to, you know, it could, there's a lot of factors that put that perfect race together.
Yeah.
Well, the beauty of Ohio in the spring too, you just never really know, especially right by the lake. You really don't know.
It
could change mid-race.
it could and it will. Our normal weather pattern is out of the west, so we don't get the lake effect too much. Okay. But it could flip on any given day. You don't know. Okay, now that the weather pattern is circling around, and now we got you know, winds off the lake, which is going to, now you got a wind chill factor you have to play into. Mm-hmm.
Well, Clint, as we kind of get ready to wrap up here, I've really enjoyed our time today, and you know, hearing you talk about Glass City. And these are my favorite interviews where you just are very passionate and are just able to go. And not rabbit trails. It's just a continuous flood of good information. But is there anything else that you, you'd have to say to somebody who might be on the fence, wondering, you know, maybe looking for a spring race to run? What separates Glass City from other races? And what's your final sales pitch to them?
Yeah, so I would say put it on your list, whether I see you this year, next year, or 3 years. You know, we like to just have you put us on the list. We recognize there's a lot of competition out there. And when I say competition, we're not really in competition with each other. You know, so every race, the way I look at this is our hometown runners are going to consider this their hometown race. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to run a race every single year. They're going to want to travel, you know. But the nice thing is they come home. So we'll see the same thing from, you know, people, you know, 3-4 hour distance. They're going to have their own hometown race. But, you know, if you decide that you're going to travel this spring, we'd love to see you come here to Toledo and represent your area and come with friends. It's always fun to see the different groups. We've got a lot of unique things that I think we can offer. In our start line this year, you know, we've changed it, you know, so because of road construction, you know. One fascinating thing, not to kind of go off topic a little bit here, but I've been doing this 15 years and I've got 14 certified courses. Every single year there's road construction
there's
somewhere,
somewhere on one of them.
Yeah. And people are like, how come you don't keep the course the same? I can't.
You want to run through, you want to run through potholes and like over gravel and torn up concrete. I mean,
So this year, you know, they're replacing bridges. I was like, well, can you just bring in like an army bridge and we can just cross it or something?
You know, somebody's got to have a pontoon boat. You can just throw right there.
Yeah, so there's always something. So the nice thing about that is it forces us to evaluate different functions again, you know. So, you know, looking at the course and it kind of goes to our continuous improvement model. Sometimes we're just forced to look at the continuous improvement, you know. So for our start line, having to force us to change our start line again, well, it gives us opportunity to change things up a little bit. So it's fun. You know, we really do care about our customer and we recognize that, you know, we use public assets to, you know, kind of make a living here. You know, so we use, you know, taxpayer roads and we shut them down and we try to be, you know, courteous to our neighbors. And, you know, I think that the core support that we have, you know, you'll see is right up there with the best of them. So, you know, if you don't see us this year, you know, put us on your list. That's all we ask.
All right. Well, Lord willing, I'm going to be there on April 23rd. I can't wait to find out. I'm not doing the full. I'm done with spring fulls. I will never do that again until I do Boston. I just can't. I don't. Adam and I got 10 on the docket for today, and that sounds terrible. Yeah. I can't imagine getting back up to 16.
Well, you're probably like me, and I'm waiting until about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon when it's warm enough to go
out.
That's
exactly what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and it's a little warmer down here because we're in the, well, I'm in Canton. He's in Broadview Heights. We're going to be in Akron. So, it, you know, a little warmer probably than it is up in Toledo. But
yeah, I think we're starting off in the 20s this morning. So I'm waiting for that sun to warm us up a little bit.
Yep.
Well, I've been noticing in my video, it seems to be shining in a little more. I feel like a weather person. We don't do video. So for those right? of you just listening,
the,
you have
I got
to
the weather front
this.
Coming in from the east here.
I'm going to mark that. I will post video of that so everybody can have it. But Clint, wonderful. I really do. I appreciate you coming on today and, you know, just mm-hmm. talking about everything. And I know it's been a, you know, a trial the last few years for you and, you know, glad to see that you have a year where you don't have to worry about COVID in all of your meetings.
I'm so sure. far, we you so never far, know. Right. Well, yeah. But, thanks guys. Yeah. As you get closer to training, if you want to, you know, pop in and give a training update, we can announce, you know, kind of as we get closer to the event, you know, some operational things that people may need to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it. We'll definitely be in touch, Clint. And Adam, I'll see you in a little bit here for a few miles. And Clint, I'll probably see you in April.
There we go. Sounds good.
So, all right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. We will see y'all next week. And until then, enjoy your miles, everybody. Boom. That was fun. That was really good.